理课堂听 class.com
Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Today we continue our discussion of Queen Elizabeth I of England.Hello, everyone. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Angela, and in the studio with me are Bill, Melissa, and Ethan. So I'm going to start with Ethan and say, introduce yourself, Ethan, and give us a brief review of what was most outstanding about yesterday's lesson.
Well, hi, everyone. As Angela just said, this is Ethan, and I'm really enjoying being here to talk about this today. It's something that I...take a lot of interest in personally. Mm-hmm. And what we talked about mostly yesterday was Henry VIII and how he had a very tumultuous family life, marrying six different women, and then also trying to provide heirs to the English throne.
Okay. Melissa?
Hi, everybody. It was very interesting yesterday learning about the history of my country, mm-hmm. because I'm from England, and learning about how the religious beliefs...was just such a big part in everybody's daily life.
Mm-hmm. And that's something I would like Bill to address. We talked about these words Catholic and Protestant, and the difference between those is really what defined this period of time.
Typically, Angela, most people in this part of the world, in Asia, they know of Christians, but they don't understand that Christianity is broken down into many different denominations. Mm-hmm. At the time of Elizabeth and Henry,the Catholic Church dominated things, but this was just beginning, the beginning of the breaking down of the Catholic Church into these different denominations.
Right. And yesterday we pointed out that one of the reasons for the breakdown was because the Catholic Church was trying to get money from people, saying that this money would buy their way into heaven.
Well, the Catholic Church at that time was the most powerful organization in Europe, and part of that was because they were able to generate the most money. Mm-hmm. So they had lots of power, money, and influence through all of Europe.
And, of course, this threatened some of the monarchs, including Henry VIII.
Well, and also we look at the Catholic Church had become a very large political player as well, not just a religious organization. Mm-hmm. And so at this time, there was a movement in the Protestant Church, especially to go back to having the church, Christian Church, to be more of a religious movement.
That's right. So it's within this context of not only in England, but throughout Europe, that there is an uprising coming from the people.Wanting religious freedom, the ability to choose whether they will worship within the established Catholic Church or they can choose another church.
Well, I think right at this time, a lot of people within the Catholic Church are realizing there's a lot of corruption here, and they've mm-hmm. gotten away from the basic roots of their religion. So that's what caused a lot of this.
Well, we're talking about this, listeners, because it does provide the background for understanding what was happening in Elizabeth's life at this time. Her father wanted a son, but married to this queen who produced a daughter, and under the Catholic Church's rules, he could not have another wife, and he could not divorce this one. So often, I know in some of us students of history have looked back and we say, oh, it was just a convenient personal thing for Henry VIII to break from the Roman Catholic Church and establish a Protestant church in England. But it was much more than that. As we will see as we continue reading now, let's begin with today's first reading on page 25 of your advanced magazine,The Perilous Path to the Throne. The Perilous Path to the Throne. Ultimately, Protestant factions tried to incite a revolution, entering London, where they were defeated and sent to their deaths. Lady Elizabeth was shipped off to the Tower of London,although charged with no crime. She anticipated execution, yet her sister simply had her put under house arrest. As her reign progressed and her health deteriorated, Queen Mary became increasingly fixated on her Catholic faith and, as a result, took to burning Protestants at the stake. In 1558, Mary died without an heir.
So as we pick up here, we see that this was a very, very tumultuous time religiously for England. Mary I had just come to power and married Philip from Spain and had become a strong Catholic presence once again in the throne.
And this was following the death of her younger brother Edward, who had succeeded their father, Henry VIII, with Henry VIII being the one who broke relations with the Catholic Church to favor the Protestant faction. And Edward followed his father's footsteps as a Protestant, but then Mary takes the throne and brings back Catholicism. It was a complete switch. It must have been very confusing to the English people.
Well, you can imagine that they're Catholic, and then Henry VIII is pushing for them to split with the Catholic Church, and now Mary wants them to go back to the Catholic Church. So it's a very confusing time for the people.
Well, in fact, the title of this paragraph is Perilous, the perilous path to the throne. So what does that word perilous mean?
Well, perilous, or we would also use the word peril, and it just means dangerous, or there is a lot of danger involved.
It was dangerous because there were many factions. Factions is one of our vocabulary focus words, and what does that mean?
A faction is a small group of people who are part of a larger group and oppose the ideas of everyone else.
So these were called Protestant factions, and what were they trying to do?
Well, they were trying to incite a revolution or start a revolution, and they entered London, but they didn't succeed in inciting or starting this revolution, and so they were killed.
They were probably not well organized, and as a result, Lady Elizabeth was suspected as being a part of this revolution because, I mean, it would have been to her benefit to have her sister taken from the throne?
Well, definitely. She was the next in line, so she would have become queen if this revolution had succeeded. And so it was a very logical step to think about that maybe Elizabeth would be behind this, trying to get this started.
So what happened to her?
She was shipped off to the Tower of London.
Now, that shipped off, that word doesn't mean that she was literally put in a ship, was she?
I actually had underlined that, Angela. It's in line 15. Shipped off means just to send something. So they probably sent her in maybe in a carriage.
Right.
And so if you look over at the right, at the left, we have a picture of the Tower of London. And underneath the caption says it's a historic fortress in London. And it's originally a royal palace and then later a prison. And now it's a museum that contains the British crown jewels.
So have any of you been to the Tower of London? Oh, Melissa.
Oh, well, I know Bill has. He said yesterday. But I've been so many times. Every time we have guests or, you know, friends, family, my parents would always send me to take them. So I've been
Would you take me? I would love to take you.
I would take all of you.
Again. Oh, thank you. I would love to go. Can you actually see the crown jewels?
Yes, you can, actually. You get to walk on this kind of a conveyor belt, and you walk through. I'm sure, Bill, you remember, and you see it, and it's been lit up really well. So
it's really something. The jewels are just beautiful. Just being on the grounds of the Tower of London is, I will use the word, it's kind of a creepy feeling in a way because it was used as a prison. And when you hear the history of how many people were killed there, it's really, it's kind of a scary thing in a way to imagine the past.
And I'm sure it still holds secrets.
Well, and that's why we can see this was a place where many people were killed. And so Elizabeth anticipated execution, or she was expecting to be killed when she got to this Tower of London.
But actually, her sister had her kept under house arrest.
And actually, when she was put under house arrest, she wasn't put under arrest in the Tower of London. She was sent to another place, a place called Hatfield House that I've actually been to.
Oh.
I went to when I was in school. When we studied this period of history when I was about 13 or 14, we took a school trip there to visit that place.
It was a much more pleasant environment.
It was, but she was kept there. She wasn't allowed to leave the grounds, so that was hard.
That's house arrest then. She had to be kept on the grounds of the house. And then let's turn the page and we learn that as Mary's reign progressed, her health deteriorated. Actually, she was married at this time to Philip II of Spain. Actually, he would become Philip II of Spain at this time. He's still a prince and heir to the throne. Mary wanted to have a child to ensure that her progeny would retain title to the throne, but she was not able to have children.
Well, we see here that she married Philip of Spain. Mm-hmm. And again, this is another example of these families, royal families, marrying throughout royalty in Europe. A lot of this has to do with politics and power and a lot less to do with love.
Oh, exactly. In fact, if we look at the family line, we'll see that Mary the First was half Spanish herself. Her mother was Catherine of Aragon, so she was from Spain. This explains why Mary was such an avid Catholic. We see the word fixated on her Catholic faith there on line 3. This is what our author uses to describe Mary. So what does that word fixated mean?
Well, if you're fixated on something, you are completely obsessed or totally preoccupied by doing something. And so she became totally involved in following out her Catholic faith.
And not just in her personal practice of piety, as we might think of it, but she became militaristic, could we say, in this? What was she doing?
Well, at this time, it was a popular thing to do to kill your opponents. And at that time, her opponents were Protestants, and she took to burning them at the stake.
I understand that was not an uncommon practice at the time, but what does that mean?
Well, to burn someone at the stake means to kill them by tying them to a post and burning them. Typically, there would be a large stack of wood underneath them, and you would just set the wood on fire and actually burn them alive.
That was really not a very nice thing to do. Well, fortunately, Mary did not stay on the throne very long, and she died without an heir. So what happens now? Well, Elizabeth takes the throne.
Elizabeth takes the throne. Upon hearing that she was queen, Elizabeth wanted to get to work immediately. Everyone else wanted her to marry immediately. If Elizabeth failed to produce an heir, then her cousin, Mary Queen of Scots, also Catholic, would inherit the throne. This needed to be prevented at all costs. Her sister's widower, now King Philip II of Spain, was the first to offer marriage, but he was far from the last. Through the course of her reign, negotiations were conducted with Eric of Sweden and the Habsburg Archduke Charles. At 38, she even toyed with the possibility of marriage to the 17-year-old French Duke of Alençon. But ultimately, the queen decided no.
Okay, the year is 1558, and Elizabeth takes the throne. Now, Melissa, you've studied this history of England. You said we know that she was under house arrest, and you told us the place. Where was that?
It's a place called Hatfield House.
And I believe that's where she was at the time she received the news.
That's right. She was actually in the garden, sitting under an oak tree, we even know. Hmm. And that's when she found out the news. And you can go visit that house and visit the oak tree that she sat under.
Hmm. And was she happy or sad to hear the news?
Well, it seems to me that she was quite happy, and she actually got to work immediately. So she started immediately. It seems like she even had plans laid out for what she would be doing if she came to the power.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we learned in our last lesson that her stepmother, Catherine Parr, the last of Henry VIII's wives, had taken Elizabeth under her wing, we said, had become her guardian and provided tutors for Elizabeth while she was still young. So, yes, I believe she was prepared, and she was watching the course of events and realized, I believe, that this would be her destiny.
My guess is that they probably knew that Mary was going to die. Typical of this time was illness, and we saw that with Edward with tuberculosis. Mary probably had some form of illness, so maybe didn't come as a surprise to Elizabeth.
Actually, it's believed that Mary had tumors because she a couple of times thought that she was pregnant due to the swelling of her abdomen, but she wasn't. And I do believe that is one of the things that led to her death. Well, Elizabeth wants to get to work, but others want her to marry. She doesn't seem to be too keen on marriage at this point. Yesterday, we talked about her attitudes toward marriage, and what did we see?
That's right. We knew that she really didn't like marriage. I think seeing just how many wives her father had gone through and just seeing all of that, I'm sure she just had a very bad impression of what it was like and just didn't want it.
But at the same time, I can understand that it is a very uncommon thing for a single woman to be the ruler of a country because there's not going to be any heirs that will take over after she dies. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that we often saw during this time. And so it's understandable how everyone was thinking, well, she's now in power, she'll be wanting to marry.
Exactly, to ensure that the family line continues. And this particular family, we say, is the Tudor family, T-U-D-O-R, the Tudor family line. And Elizabeth is the last of the line at this point. They're eager for her to marry, but she has personally witnessed such atrocities that she doesn't want any part of that at this point.
I had a funny thought, Angela. This is the original dysfunctional family. That's a term that's not in our article, but maybe people have heard the term dysfunctional family.
Yes.
My guess is if you looked in the dictionary, you might see a picture of the Tudor family.
Good point, Bill. Well, so the people are looking, her advisors are looking on and saying, but Elizabeth, if you don't produce an heir, this is what will happen. And what were they saying?
They were worried because if she didn't, the next in line after her was actually a cousin, a distant cousin who was Mary, Queen of Scots, but she was Catholic. And that's terrible in this era.
Yes. You said Queen of Scots. So she was already a queen, but she's Queen of Scots. Now, how could she inherit the English throne?
Well, she was part of the line. She was descendant, actually, through Henry the VII, and that was Henry the VIII's father. And so you can see it on our family line. If you look over, she's on the right-hand side, three rows down.
Yes. Okay. So a cousin, and she is Queen of Scots, and yet she would be the closest family relation then to inherit the English throne. Okay. So everyone knows this, and they're really concerned because Mary, Queen of Scots, is such an avid Catholic.
Well, and they're also looking back and remembering Mary the First's tyrannical rule on the throne when she was burning people at the stake. Mm. And so this was something they probably wanted to prevent because they knew that if a Catholic came back, there was a likelihood that those same practices would come back as well.
On line 14, we read, this needed to be prevented at all costs. So that means it was of utmost importance that Mary, Queen of Scots, not come to the throne of England. So they start looking for suitable husbands. And who do they look to?
Well, funnily enough, surprisingly enough, it was her sister's widower, who now was the king, King Philip II of Spain.
He was the first to offer marriage. I find that ironic in one sense, but Bill, I don't think it was because of his fondness for Elizabeth necessarily, right?
No, this is a typical pattern. Again, we see it's moves that are made for politics and power. I was just thinking that we've seen this pattern before because her father, Henry VIII, had married the wife, the widower of his brother. So this has happened before. And so, and again, it's all about politics and power. It's not because King Philip probably was madly in love with her.
No, and as we've already established, Elizabeth seems to have been one who could learn from other people's mistakes, and she decided she did not want to repeat her father's mistakes. Well, he was the first to offer marriage, but far from the last. Well, who were some of the others?
Well, some of the others included Eric of Sweden and the Habsburg Archduke Charles.
So Sweden, that's up in Scandinavia. The Habsburgs, we know, were over in the area of Germany, Austria.
We can see the politics and the power here between all of the families and the maneuvering. We've got the royal families in Spain, Sweden, Germany, and Austria. And then also we looked at Mary, Queen of Scots. I believe she was married to the King of France, and then here she was ruling Scotland. So these are all geographical and political matches that are just all lined up for those reasons.
But the Queen decides, no, she will have none of that. But there is still danger to dodge, so let's go on now and hear today's final reading. Dodging Danger. The religious turmoil of the times shaped the Queen's life. Elizabeth was a religious Protestant who regarded convoluted discussions of dogma as beside the point. There is only one Jesus Christ. The rest is a dispute over trifles, she insisted. Unlike her relatives, she was free of any zealotry. When it came to religion, her wish was simply to keep stability in her land. The same could not be said of Mary, Queen of Scots, who appears to have schemed to become England's Catholic queen throughout her life.
Listeners, this is your Advanced Studio Classroom program, and we are talking about the life of Queen Elizabeth I of England. And as we have established many times today and in our previous program, the religious turmoil of the times, the 16th century, shaped the Queen's life and affected the decisions that she made. Elizabeth herself was a Protestant, and that is in opposition to the Catholic Church. But we have a word here, convoluted. It's not a commonly used word, but it's a very useful and a very interesting word. What does it mean?
Convoluted means extremely complicated and difficult to understand. I think often of convoluted might be used in a sentence saying, well, the politician's convoluted speech left all of the listeners confused.
Yes, that's a very good application into modern times. Mm-hmm. Now, within our context, the word is used to talk about the dogma. And what does that word dogma mean?
Well, dogma is a fixed belief or set of beliefs that people are expected to accept without any doubts.
Right. And we often talk about our Christian doctrines as being dogma. Now, it's not a negative word. It's a very good word because it gives us a sense of confidence and certainty when we talk about the dogma of our faith. But she says that the convoluted discussions of dogma were beside the point. Now, what do we mean when we say beside the point?
They weren't relevant. It wasn't the point. It was next to the point. She didn't think it was practical or relevant to be talking about dogma. We said dogma is something that we have to accept as that's just it. But the problem was people were discussing it. And she was like, we don't need to discuss this. That's not relevant.
Right. All the convoluted discussions of dogma between the Catholic and the Protestant Church, which she said, that's beside the point. So, Melissa, what was the point in her opinion?
She says, there is only one Jesus Christ. The rest is disputes over trifles.
And a trifle is?
A trifle is anything. It's just a little matter. It's nothing that we would say is important at all.
So for Queen Elizabeth I, she's saying, okay, Catholics and Protestants, we both agree there is only one Jesus Christ. Then that's all that's important. Everything else is beside the point. It's just a trifle. It's not important. So this was a different position than the rest of her relatives took. I mean, we have her father, her brother, who were both strongly Protestant, but her older sister, as a Catholic, was she was just off the deep end to the point of burning Protestants.
What I'm getting from this passage right here, Angela, is that she was focused on governing more so than getting in this religious debate. She was interested in the government of England.
On line 13, Bill, we read that Queen Elizabeth was free of any zealotry. What does that word mean?
Zealotry means an attitude that one's opinions about something are right, and everyone else should believe it the same way.
I think of the word zeal, which is actually at the root of this word, and that means having a lot of enthusiasm for a certain belief. But when we take it to the point of being a zealot for something, then that's gone to the extreme.
Oh, definitely. And so a zealot is someone who is going to do actions that are very extreme, and we often use this term as well.
So we can say then that Queen Mary I, Elizabeth's older sister, was a zealot when it came to the Catholic faith.
Well, when you're a zealot, typically you want to impose your will upon others, regardless of what they think.
That certainly described Queen Mary I, who was burning people at the stake for their Protestant faith. But when it came to matters of religion, Queen Elizabeth was not a zealot. What was her desire?
Well, her desire was to keep stability in the land, and this was something that I think England really needed at this time.
Okay. So actually to have peace in terms of the religious practice would allow people then to carry on their economic activities, and that would bring stability to the land.
I think this shows that she really wanted to be a good queen, someone who cared about her people, didn't want to impose this belief or that belief. She just wanted everyone to be peaceful and to actually live well.
And so I would say she tolerated the Catholics who were practicing, not the Catholics who were zealots and burning people at the stake, but she allowed them to practice their faith. And at the same time, then she allowed the Protestants to practice their faith. And of course, now we see that that was a wise move for her to take.
Well, it especially was, and if we look down, we see the same could not be said of Mary, Queen of Scots, who was the next person in line, and she appears to have schemed to become England's Catholic queen throughout her life.
I underlined the word schemed there in line 12, Angela, and schemed means to plot and plan in secret to achieve maybe a personal goal, and when we scheme, it's not a positive thing.
And if our listeners are interested, they can look at the magazine on page 27. There's a box titled A Queen's Conspiracy, and they can read more about Mary, Queen of Scots, and who she was and the story behind that whole situation.
That's right. And to understand the family relations, we do have the Queen Elizabeth I family line in a chart on page 25. So this is a kind of a complicated story in more ways than one, but it's very interesting and it's very important to the outcome of history in Europe and America. We've still got more to learn. So we hope that you come back as we finish this history lesson about England's Queen Elizabeth I. This is Angela,
Ethan,
Melissa,
and Bill
saying goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.